about 42 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of... I mean, I think it's 42 seconds. Who really can be sure? The clock claims it is 42 seconds, but I don't really know that there's any benchmarks today. It's something after the hour of 11, and it's the month of November, the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. Live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. This, my friends, is a Rick Emerson radio program. Is it hot in here?
No.
Really warm.
There it is not. Well, you got a turtleneck on.
Yeah, and a sweater underneath it because I rode my bike today.
Right.
It's a little cold.
It's 503-733-2970. I always want to say an 800 number there, but I've realized that 800 numbers are a thing of the past, that nobody uses them anymore. It is Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. Here, just a skosh, as our Asian friends say, we'll welcome Mailman Chris to the Rick Emerson radio program in a second. Let me finish my cup of coffee. Don't go anywhere. The sidelong on glance that really gets me. There you go. And it was fantastic, Scotty. Thank you. All right. All right. It's 503-733-2970. It is Friday. And welcome to Day 12. A bunch of stuff coming up today. And it's a busy weekend for us anyway. You got the storm coming up this weekend. And then tonight, Tim Conway and Harvey Korman, emceed by Tim Riley, myself.
And some lady.
And what?
Well, there's another lady on the bill.
It seems Oh, for the love of God.
It's not working?
No, it is. It's low. Can you drop the bed a little bit? Because his microphone doesn't seem to be able to... All right.
Should I shake it?
Yes. Microphones are just like babies if you shake them. And now I sound hollow.
Not the way I sounded yesterday.
Is it hollow where you are?
Like you have a head cold. It doesn't sound
it
like
it does,
you.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
Fantastic. All right.
Well, I don't know what happened. I'm moving in my chair. Find a better area in which to talk.
Well, let's not worry about it. It's 503-733-2970. Does it sound like I'm inside of a cube?
It does. That's the way I sounded yesterday.
Yeah, fantastic. All right.
Wait, do you hear a weird noise?
I'm hearing voices.
Are you hearing? Why are you here?
What is that noise?
Okay, but let's first of all stop and say that I never hear any voices, and I don't think Sarah does either.
You sound so hollow.
Okay,
I do too.
Turn Tim's microphone off for a second. Okay, I think that's what it is. Okay, so here's the thing. So, Tim, why don't you? Isn't this exciting? All we need now is for John Geronimo to be here complaining about the phones. So what you need to do is, Tim, stay a little bit more on your microphone right now. Drop his microphone level a little bit, because that's what it is. You're having to crank his microphone up so high that it's getting ambient. You and I are ambiently showing up in Tim's microphone. That's
what
that is. All right. Tim, say something.
Health ministers pass anti-obesity charters.
Okay, there you go.
English is the official language now in most states, but Oregon is not among them.
I got to turn it up. You can't hear him.
All right. Well, you'll have to ride the pot, Sarah, as they say in broadcasting school. It's okay. We'll get it tweaked during the break. It's 503-733-2970. Scotty J is now suggesting that the Tina Yothers celebrity chair is haunted. We got to get some sort of a sign or something for that. And by the way, I got to say this, that if/when we move to new and more spacious quarters, if that happens at some point, we got to take the Tina Yothers celebrity chair with us. And I don't care who it is. I don't care what kind of chair.
We're never
going to
get past Quiznos with that chair.
No, we'll take it on those. Hey, you leave in the middle of the night. I know she didn't sign it, but there's nowhere to sign. The only way... Yeah, I know. But the only place she could have signed it, Scotty is insisting that Tina Yothers had signed the chair. She would have had to sign it, like, the ass part of the chair, and then Joshua Jackson... Yeah, but then he would have sat on it, and then it would have been all rubbed away. It would have been like... What is that statue? The lips are all red from the thousands of women kissing it. This would have been like the opposite effect. The thousands of asses in the studio would have eventually rubbed Tina Yothers' signature off. It doesn't make any sense at all. Let's.
This isn't going to make New Orleans laugh.
Oh, can I see that?
Yes.
Oh.
That's very sad.
Oh, look at that. Fantastic. Oh, just when you thought this world couldn't get any sadder and more pathetic, and just when you thought it was
gone
forever.
Did I see a whoopee? I think I saw a whoopee.
Comic Relief 2006. God, Billy Crudup. When did we as a nation vote to continue this? Why do people keep watching it? And it's on HBO.
Nobody watches it.
No, it is not. They don't. And it's on HBO, which is, I expect better from HBO. I expect HBO to have better taste in programming than this. Boy, they had the greatest... They had the greatest joke on Don and Mike last night. They were doing Don and Mike. They spent about half an hour last night teaching the audience how to make crystal meth, and I don't really know why they were doing that or to what end. But I believe they were gathering. As I left the studio last night, I was here kind of late last night. But as I was leaving, it sounded very much to me as though Rob Spiewak was helping them to assemble in studio all of the ingredients they need to manufacture methamphetamine. So I'm not. I mean, they're in another county in another jurisdiction. Doesn't matter to me. But they did have the. They were talking about crystal meth making you lose weight, and they noted that there's. This is a drug that makes you... The drug that sucks all the humor out of you, which is Billy Crystal Meth. Bam! and I have to admit that I laughed heartily at that. God damn. An all-star comedy event. An all-star comedy event. And it's still in 2006. And the biggest stars we could possibly find are Whoopi Goldberg and Robin Williams to help families recovering from Hurricane Katrina. None of whom... never mind.
I'm sure they'll make everybody feel better.
Help New Orleans laugh. Really, I want to have some sort of a comic relief thing where we just raise money to put these three people on a boat and kick them out to sea for the rest of time. And I was, let me just say this, when I was at Borat the other night, and you were right about this, that Borat has exactly the wrong previews running before it. It's like 8, 9, 10 trailers, and normally trailers are a great part of a movie. It is interesting to note that everybody hates that... Boy, everybody hates that 20. You're in the 20. And the 20 is just the most repellent the quarter hour of my life or whatever. Third of an hour. It's just time seems to slow.
Nate embarrasses me every time we go to see the 20. He'll ask every single person who works there, have we missed the 20? Do we miss the 20?
See, but I like that. See, because it's retarded.
It is retarded.
But it's weird that as a people, and I think I speak for everybody here, we all hate commercials, but none of us hate previews. But the difference is, if you're sitting at home watching television, and I'm not talking about the Super Bowl, I'm not talking about some extra exciting commercial break. If you're just sitting at home and some ad comes on for some ass movie starring Meg Ryan, you don't care. You get the TiVo and you skip right past that crap. You're in the theater, you watch it, it's exciting. There is, I don't know what it is about being in the theater. There is something about the theatrical experience that makes previews really enjoyable. Except when they all star Ben Stiller and Robin Williams, which was the case before Borat. And they're showing this god, and there was a collective groan, by the way, from the audience. Because have you seen the trailer for At the Night at the Museum?
I don't think so.
It's sort of a Home Alone meets that Higginbottom book where the kids get trapped in the museum overnight meets Indian in the Cupboard.
And is Robin Williams in that?
Robin Williams is in it.
I think I saw a preview. I don't remember anything about it.
Oh, no. Here's what I remember about it. Because the theory is, the shtick of the movie is, the premise is, that Ben Stiller is the new guy. He's the new security guard at a museum overnight. But what nobody has told him, but what he learns to his shock and whimsicality, is that at night, all of the things in the museum come to life. Which is, that's kind of an interesting concept. It's kind
that
of funny.
Like, no, that was like the Sesame Street movie I've told you about, where he's trapped in the museum and he hangs up the little Egyptian boy just trying to get back. Big Bird.
Oh, really? It's mm-hmm. always Big Bird.
It is.
Big Bird is the opus of the Sesame Street world. But anyway, so Ben Stiller's locked in this museum overnight where everything comes to life. And at one point, in a movie when they're... You're not supposed to be able to recognize right away that somebody is somebody. In other words, Mrs. Doubtfire is the best example of this. Really, is there anybody on Earth that wouldn't see Mrs. Doubtfire in all the makeup and immediately go, Robin Williams? Especially when you hear the voice. You know what I'm talking? It's like, what was that movie with the Wayans brothers where they dressed up like corpses and walked around high school?
White
girls, white chicks?
Yeah.
Wasn't that Kyle's favorite movie?
Yes.
And so there's the Wayans brothers, really dressed like some sort of dead, bloated Caucasian teenagers, walking around a school, and we're all supposed to believe that everybody doesn't look at them and A, recoil in horror from their zombie-like appearance, and B, as soon as they speak, you don't recognize it's a Wayans brother. And so it is at this Night at the Museum thing, where there's Ben Stiller, and he's walking by, was it Teddy Roosevelt? Some president, up on horseback in the sort of like, onward to, you know, charging over the hill pose.
Yes, it was.
What? No, I'm just making fun of the sound of the mic.
we'll fix it in the we'll have the engineer come take a look at it. We'll get through those quickly. We got to break and we got to do some stuff. But Ben Stiller's walking by the Teddy Roosevelt thing, and immediately we all got Robin Williams, and then we're all supposed to be surprised when it's Robin Williams and he jumps off the horse and starts talking like John Wayne or whatever it is, because Robin Williams doesn't actually have any jokes. He doesn't actually. This is it's sort of a verbal sleight of hand with that guy, because just the other day, like Newsweek magazine. magazine 3, 4, 5 weeks ago. They were doing some list of the top the 10 funniest Americans. And Robin Williams can consistently and constantly shows up on that list every single year. I challenge anybody here in this room to recite a Robin Williams joke. There you go. No one knows any jokes by Robin Williams.
How about a Roseanne Barr joke?
See, Roseanne, I actually know jokes by Roseanne. You name Bill Cosby, you name anybody.
She's coming back, she's on this HBO special.
See, I would watch that, though, because she actually has comedic skills. Robin Williams doesn't. He talks really quickly, puts 15 comments into about 10 seconds, and then speaks like Julia Child for no reason. And there you go. And that is what passes for humor. Anyway, but the audience, my point is the audience audibly groaned when it was like, and Robin Williams, and we all kind of went, because the whole group of people there to see Borat are not going to be interested in Robin Williams. The only thing that I was kind of sad about is that we did not get the trailer for Apocalypto, which is a new Mel Gibson piece of craziness, where it's all done in like, I don't know, they're all speaking Esperanto or something, and I was kind of hoping to see that just because I wanted the audience to heckle it, and it didn't happen. All right. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program.
The postman is the person in your neighborhood.
Our good friend, Mailman Chris, joining us now on the Rick Emerson Show. How are you, sir?
I am fine, and yourself?
I am. I'm Danby, sir. How you doing? What's life? How are things? Did you work today? Oh no, you heading into? When are you got? You got like 9 days or something coming off, something like that?
Pardon me? What was that?
I don't know. Didn't you tell me you had some huge governmentally mandated vacation you're coming up? Or is it somebody else?
No, must be someone else.
All right. Because there's the whole... Because you got like 3 days coming off around the Thanksgiving thing. So...
No. Unfortunately, we get Thursday off. We have to work Friday.
There is a weird hum happening over here, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not... What's that hum? Oh, it's Tim. No, there's... I hear like a weird staticky sound or something.
I like it.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Did you see the trailer for Reno 911 Miami?
I did. And, you know, those... I know that everybody likes those guys. Even people whose comedic taste I respect, they like Reno 911. And I've tried, and I just don't. It's just... I just can't find it funny. I don't know why. Maybe there's something wrong with me, but it's one of those things that everybody else in the country finds hilarious, and I'm just not able to get with that, as the kids say. So I don't know.
I just like seeing when TV shows that are already edgy go to the big screen where they can go as far as you think they, you know, without any limit. So that, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, the censoring of language.
The one thing that I did find funny was when and I saw it coming, but it was still funny, is in the trailer there's a huge whale. There's like a huge dead sperm whale washed up at the beach. And they're all doing the thing of like, all right, we got to roll this dead whale back into the ocean. And they all line up like they're going to be pushing a car, except it's a whale. And they all line up lengthways down the whale, lean into it, and they're getting ready to roll the whale back into the ocean. And they push, and the guy just falls right into the whale. The guy just, the whale, because the whale's been sitting and rotting in the sun, and the guy just like plunges right into it and comes out covered in whale goo. That's funny right there. I will also say, and then we'll talk about what we're going to do on the show today. I will say it's one final note. In that Night at the Museum movie, which looks terrible, there was one moment that made me laugh out loud, which is there's a sequence towards the end of the trailer where Ben Stiller and a monkey are having a slapping contest. And one of them is covered in shaving cream. I think it's the monkey. So it's a monkey covered in shaving cream, and he and Ben Stiller are just looking at each other in the face and staring and having a slapping contest. That's funny. You know why? Because even the worst moment in a movie can be salvaged by the addition of a monkey. That is a fact. That's a scientifically established thing. Everyone knows that to be true. So you just write that down. Everything starts to go south in your movie. They had to just, in fact, every movie made in Hollywood ought to just have a cage of monkeys just lurking right off stage. You know, right off the edge of the camera. And as soon as things in the movie start to go bad, wham, you just open the cage, monkeys rampage through the set. Imagine how great that would be. You're watching whatever it is, that Marie Antoinette crap with Kirsten Dunst. You're sitting there, you're falling asleep. Ha! Suddenly chimpanzees storm through the set, tearing off people's feet. That's comedy right there.
You can start your own focus group, call it like Monkeys R Us or something.
Totally. There's,
you know, you bring people in, you find out what the dead spots are on the movie, and you just put monkeys in digitally.
And then you... then as the preview audience is walking out, have you ever gone to a preview where they give you those cards? You're walking out of the theater. It's like, how would you rate this movie on a scale of 1 to 5? Did you find the dialogue? And would you recommend this movie to a friend? They really ought to know. Would this, add another question, would this movie's comedy be augmented by the addition of several monkeys at key points in the scene? There you go.
I don't think it would have helped the previous movie I saw. It was RoboCop 3.
Oh, no. The only thing that would have helped RoboCop 3 is to go back in time and abort Frank Miller so he couldn't write it. All right, let's move on. Here's what we're going to get through today. We got the worst story ever, speaking of things being torn off of other things. Scott Daly is going to be here, speaking of bad movies. What celebrity can now get paid to have sex with your wife? We'll answer that question right here on the Rick Emerson Show. Let's see. A listener asks for help in punishing his brother. And we will talk to Ed McCarthy, who I swear to God is standing outside in the rain in front of a Best Buy wishing he was at home, instead having to watch nerds lining up for a video game system that costs more than my first car. So we will do that today. And and Jim Roop is going to talk to us as well, as we continually flog the OJ thing, which we're all horrified by, but which we can't help talking about. There you go, my friend.
Might we deign to receive the idea today?
Maybe. Well, I'm not going to make any promises, but I'll try to get to it.
Okay. All so right. You've got the worst story ever, Scott Daly. What celeb is now paid for sex with your wife?
Well, theoretically. I'm not saying he is, but I'm saying it is possible that he could get paid to have sex with your wife.
How can we help punish a listener's brother,
yes,
McCarthy, and Jim Roop?
Yes, that is exactly what we're going to do today, my friend.
At 52.
All right, there you go. All right, so we will talk to you at the end of the program around 2:50 or so. We'll see where we are.
Absolutely.
Thank you, my friend. There you go. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon.
Hello.
You're looking good today.
Thanks.
Now, you know, that turtleneck works. It does. I have decided this. Now, I don't know much about much, and I don't know a lot about a lot. I know a little about a little, though, and one of those things is this. That you, here's a look you pull off really well. You pull off the, I just got dropped here out of 1967 it look. And I don't mean that in a hippie, trippy, I don't shave under my arms kind of a way. I mean, you look like you ought to be in a 1967 Peter Sellers film. And Tim knows exactly what I'm talking about there. That's a look you make work. It's like when you wear that that robin's egg blue sweater.
Mm-hmm.
That's
I love sweater weather.
Sweater weather's a funny phrase. That's a look that you pull off really well. You really make that work.
Thank you.
Not that other looks don't work. I'm just saying that's one you ought to... It's like, and I can talk about this because she knows. Here's the thing is that my wife doesn't really know how to dress. And she's the first to admit that. I mean, she has a few looks she can make work, but she's not one of those girls that just instinctively knows what goes with what. So she and I have this... this agreement that when she wears something that really works, that I sort of flag it. I'm like, note to self, and I make her file it away. That's a look, though. I'm just saying, you just make a mental note to yourself.
Well, I was kind of regretting the sweater after my bike decided that the gears weren't going to shift anymore. I'm stuck in the hardest gear, and I had to. It didn't happen until I was about 10 minutes away from my house. So now my entire ride home is going to be in third gear.
Fantastic.
All the way uphill.
Oh, that's
great. That's going to be a fun one.
And, well, this I don't want to talk about it, but your bike. All why is this? Why is it that your bike never just goes belly up when you're a block from your house or a block from your destination? It is all, it's like the bike knows. It's like there's some sort of GPS linked right to the karmic police, and as soon as you get about halfway there, mm-hmm, or halfway up a hill, that's when it always happens to me. Halfway up a hill, bam, pedals come off, handlebars disintegrate. All right, Tim Riley's working on the following stories for you today, which you will be able to hear later on through a microphone that we will have fixed so it actually works.
PlayStation 3 violence breaks out across America. No one is safe. There's a robbery in Connecticut. One person is shot. Casino Royale is said to be better than originally thought. And the woman of Barat seek vengeance.
Fantastic. By the way, this email says, Rick, we hear the humming too. It sounds like Amazing Grace. Ha, ha, ha. Thank you. Thank you. This is Mike in Portland. Thank you very much. Just a real quick note about a couple of things. Then we'll break. We'll come back. Lisa Goddard is going to join us at the bottom of the hour, and we will answer the burning question. How much more awkward can Rick possibly make their exchangers today? I will say that it's a nice big deal. Tim and I are going to be at the Schnitzer tonight, emceeing. I mean, really, the big news is Louise Duarte. That really is. I mean, I know that Tim Conway's going to be there.
Right.
But really, it's Louise Duarte that's the big draw. And we will be introducing, and we get to go backstage, which is cool.
We might even see her flipping her wig, or whatever she might
do. The best part is that, like, you put your hands in front of you as though you were emphasizing that she had large bazooms.
Well,
Tim, we might get to see her big breasts, fluffing her wig, or whatever she does. Her merkin.
She might be doing her vocal exercises.
Is that what they call it? All right. So that's... Well, and the great thing about it is that you and I can get photos which will then go right next to the Rickles photos. But you don't have one, do you? Oh.
No, I got there late.
Oh, I just put my foot in it again. See, that's right. You don't have the Rickles photo.
Well, I fell for the old thing that... Not that many people are going to show up.
No.
And they're always wrong every time.
No, they're always wrong about that. And so that's right. You went out. Well, you know what?
I get there 5 minutes ahead of time.
You know what I'm going to do? that's what. Well, how crowded could it possibly be? Let's just show up. I don't want to see the opening act.
There's a line all the way back to Otis.
And it was two nights that guy sold out. He's 100 years old. He sold that out. Same thing with Conway Corman, man. I guess there is in certain demographics a considerable buzz about that. I'll have Angelique fix the photo of me and Don Rickles. I'll just take Clyde's face out and put you there. Clyde's.
How would Clyde feel about that?
Clyde's body, the big camel hair coat.
He's a non-person.
No, I mean, I'll keep that one.
Oh.
But I'll have another version made where I just crop out Clyde's face and stick your face right on top of his body. Then it'll be like you did meet. Then it'll be like you met Rickles. And then, because we're going to have a whole gallery of people we've interviewed who are about to die.
Oh.
Not to be morbid, but I'm saying one must cherish those remaining moments that the good Lord gives us. And so forth.
They'll outlive us.
It really is true. All right, let's break here. We'll come back. It's 503-733-2970. When we come back, Lisa Goddard comes on the show. The Hum leaves the show. You stay right there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is Friday. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. You know, here's the weird thing about Tom Cruise. Do you ever notice how much he looks like Jason Schwartzman sometimes? Okay, look at this. Look at Tom Cruise in this photo in USA Today. Tell me he doesn't look like Jason Schwartzman right there.
Well, the only resemblance is the nose.
Maybe. Well, he's got the... Maybe
and the shaggy hair.
And the stringy hair kind of going on.
Jason Schwartzman's really good looking, though. Tom Cruise, not so much.
Here's the thing about Tom Cruise, is that Tom Cruise, and I know we were talking the other day about the women who are so attractive that it becomes distracting, Scarlett Johansson, Nicole Kidman, sort of back in the day. The thing about Tom Cruise is, I have this belief that for people to really be, it's not attractive, but there are people where their looks are so, I'm not saying you need a flaw, but I'm saying Tom Cruise is really, I mean, conventionally speaking, he's an attractive man, but the problem is there's nothing distinctive about him. His face...
has a flaw. His teeth are completely shifted. Have you ever noticed that?
Shifted? They're all sideways.
No, one of his...
He's a shark.
His two front teeth, they're shifted over. One of them is, like, right in the middle of his face. That's always
I don't understand.
Me.
What do you mean?
His teeth
He's got
off.
Like a beaver tooth where it just comes...
No. I mean, they're perfectly straight, but they're off-center. So, I mean, all of his teeth are straight, but it's like his two front teeth are off to the left a little bit.
So they're missing a lot. So it's like
I can't believe you've never noticed that, yeah. And like his two front teeth, instead of, like, in the middle of where they both should be, like,
they're off. They're off to the left by, like, an inch. Okay, now you got to find me a picture, though. So it's like he was all perfect, and then somebody whacked him real hard on the side of the face and his teeth. It's sort of like it's like one of those houses where there's an earthquake and the upper floor is a little bit shifted from the lower floors. All right. Well, because my observation was going to be that his looks are actually, because he doesn't really seem to have a lot of flaws, although this. That's fantastic. You really have to appreciate this. Sarah just put up on her screen just a giant picture of Tom Cruise's teeth. Maybe.
You have that one?
Right there. Yeah. Okay, but this is, I think, a you thing where you really need like a laser pointer and a protractor.
Totally. I've noticed it since I was little, and I think other people noticed it too.
And maybe, because I was going to say that he does have sort of his appearance is a little bit like Teflon, in that he's just sort of so Ken doll looking that your eyes just sort of slide right off of him. That's the thing. Whereas you find somebody that maybe has, I don't know, a little bit of an unconventional appearance, and there's kind of something to grab onto. But with him, man, it's like you don't. You just see that guy anyway. But your theory is that they had already gotten married, and this is it may be that they're already.
I think that they that they've already done all the legal stuff.
So you think that they're going to have a ceremony, but that legally speaking, their marriage has already taken place.
I would think so.
Because
if they're spending time in City Hall.
It says, Braccione, Italy, Jennifer Lopez and Jim Carrey were among stars flooding Rome's tiny Ciampino Airport Thursday for nuptials between... He's 44? God, I had no idea he was that old. I guess it makes sense. And Katie Holmes, 27. I had no idea she was that old. The couple will be married Saturday. Jada Pinkett Smith, Brooke Shields? Somebody's under a mind control ray. J.J. Abrams and Redskins owner Dan Snyder. Also jetted in for the wedding, facing close to two dozen. Behold the. Oh, that's just sad. That's really sad.
So this would have been our chance to be able to meet him.
Seriously.
Only like a little over 20 people waiting.
Two dozen. Jesus. I mean, I know that maybe Italy isn't the world power on the scale that we are, but good God Almighty. Two dozen pop boy, get security. Where's the police tape? We need to hold back.
Grand Mesa security to hold back this slightly over 20 strong crowd. Can you get some help down here? Thank you so much.
It's got to be sad. Two dozen paparazzi. Holmes' parents, who at one point said they were horrified by her conversion to Scientology, and now apparently...
Yeah, I thought they weren't invited, or I thought they weren't going.
They've had their brains removed and replaced with tasty Scientology crystals. Holmes' parents arrived Thursday, were whisked away to the St. Regis Grand Hotel. The betrothed have been photographed leaving the Hostler Hotel. Blah, 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 blah. And apparently Jim Carrey is there as well, and also Mark Anthony. And let me just say this. You know, Mark Anthony, he's that singer. He's the guy. I don't know if they're married. Is Mark Anthony married to Jennifer Lopez?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let me just say this right now. When you look at Mark Anthony, here's exactly what will come to mind. You Mommy. Killed my father. Prepare to die. It's exactly. And then Brooke Shields, who's got this sort of the same sort of weird Gestapo sunglasses on her that Tom Cruise was always wearing. Brooke Shields has got to be. There's got to be like a pod Brooke Shields. There's got to be some other Brooke Shields, like hidden in an attic somewhere, struggling to get free. There's just no way. Let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson radio program from the Hill. CNN radio correspondent with a brain full of knowledge and a heart full of another thing that's like knowledge but different, Lisa Goddard. Hello, Lisa.
Oh, Rick, I thought you were going to pull out a new last name for me.
Oh, God damn it. Oh, damn it. What was that? Was it going to be a particular name?
Yeah, I think Deltry.
All right, hold on. I'm going to put you back on hold. Don't go anywhere. You stay right there.
All right.
All right. And so, that Tom Cruise. Oh, he's crazy. Ka-ching. Let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson program, From the Hill, with a heart and a thing. Oh, damn it. Hold on. Yes, I'm sorry. Hold on. Like, can we do this one more time? Now my ramp up is all it's all skewed. All right. And that local sporting team was sure great last night. They were superior to the sporting team from that other area. Battle of the Sexes coming up. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome to the Rick Emerson radio program. From the Hill, fashionably attired and with an IQ that can boil water, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Deltrig. Hello, Lisa.
Hey, I don't know. We got to keep trying it on for size. I'm good. Rick, how are you? Now that you asked me how I was.
I don't know. I got to say that the name clanks a little for me. It's not that it's a bad name.
It falls flat.
Well, it's not that it falls flat. It's that hard G sound at the end. You see, with Goddard, it sort of works because it's like a 1-2 punch. Like, I'm Goddard. Bam, bam. The Deltrig, though, it sounds like... Deltrig sounds like... it sounds like a deep sea whaling vessel of some kind.
Oh, right.
So
perhaps one of your listeners needs a name for such a vessel.
Maybe. I don't know. That just seems like one of those Jacques Cousteau things. Like, we are out to sea.
That is true.
On the deep sea vessel, the Deltrig, as we attempt to discern the effect of whaling activities on the krill counts in the, you know, whatever it is that they do. All right. Well, you ought to read the list. Here's the thing. You ought to hear the names that I don't suggest to you. Lisa Goddard, who is looking for a new last name when you become married to your betrothed or whatever it is you call that. Is it betrothed? Are you betrothed when you're married or is that just when you're engaged?
I think it's when you're engaged.
All right. So here's, let me just give you a sampling. In case you think that any of my names or the ones that I do read you are perhaps off-putting or just not quite right, here's some ones that I've just overlooked. Lisa Rambo. Lisa Skywalker.
Oh, yes.
Lisa Kirk. And then, of course, Lisa Picard.
Yes.
Lisa Ramone, which I'm a big fan of, by the way. And then there's names that there's sort of, I understand where they come from. Hold on, this is bothering me now. Sarah pointed out that I had something between my teeth. Is it still there?
Nope.
It's gone?
It's all gone.
I realize it's the radio, but somebody tells you that, and then it's like, and then you just want to be jamming the fork into your mouth with a pocket mirror over and over to make sure that... All right, here's the ones that... And I understand where the people are coming from. I really do. There's names that sound good. The theory behind them is strong, and then they all fall apart. There is... Now, this is Latin for mind, which is mentes, which is M-E-N-T-E-S.
Wow.
Lisa Mentes. But here's the thing, is that Mentes, and I don't wish to be crude or engage in any sort of blue dialogue.
Surely,
but yeah. Mentes is sort of uncomfortably close to Menses for me. And I feel that it's an awkward sounding name. And then there's, is this Cordescue? Cordesque? Sarah, you went to college. What is this? What is this word? C-O-R-D-E-S-Q-U-E. Cordesque? I believe it's Latin for heart.
Oh, wow, I like that.
Cordesque, except...
With the idea.
Except I'm reasonably intelligent. My first thing was just to call it Cordescue.
Yeah, and that does break your requirement, which I think is a good one, that you should be able to... It should look like it sounds.
It's all about marketing. This is like, am I constantly... This is what I have told people in the past. It's because at a moment's prompting... And probably while we're on the subject, or not on the subject, as the case may be, it probably is good that Laura Caviezel doesn't have the ability to monitor these interviews because
it might in fact be good. Yes,
she would be horrified at how long I take to actually get to the point, how far afield we go, and really how wildly divergent we are in any given the day from the actual subject of discussion. But I was going to say this, that at a moment's prompting, I can just give endless, long, droning dissertations about music and rock and roll and the effect of rock and roll on pop culture, etc. But I've always said that the two best band names ever in America were Kiss and Rush, because they were simple, one-syllable, common words, easy to spell, easy to sound, and they had a positive sort of forward momentum to them.
Right.
That's why Rush Limbaugh is such a great name for a radio host.
True.
But Cordescue, or whatever the hell this is... And a Cordescue, it sounds like some sort of ointment that you would put on to stop like a muscle spasm.
Sounds a little icky.
You know, stop unpleasant leg twitching with Cordescue. Apply directly to thigh or something. And basically, here's what it is, Lisa. I've got nothing. That's what it is. I have nothing.
Like I said, we've got times. We're going to have to revisit this. You know, I think in a couple months down the road.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we have to take what my guidance counselor used to call a timeout from this.
Right. You can't force it.
No.
It's got to be right, Rick.
Yes.
It's got to feel right.
Just gotta relax and let it happen naturally. Here's the thing about today, though, and Nancy Pelosi. Let me ask you this. And now, I'm not going to say that I turned to Sean Hannity for anything remotely resembling an accurate representation of the day's news.
Okay.
But Sean Hannity, because he's got a small peanut-like brain, was immediately launching into this Nancy Pelosi thing and about how her choice for a number two, which is, you know, the Murtha, she wasn't able to get it done.
Right.
And they went with Hoyer instead, and it was a whole lot of like, is Nancy Pelosi's leadership in trouble before it even begins? And my question is, and I want to even spend a long time talking about this because I think the majority of people don't really care, but my question is, what does that even mean, you know, that she couldn't get her guy in there, and should I even care? Does it even affect my life in any way?
Yeah, I don't think that it does affect your life much. I think it means that the Democrats are trying to play this smart, most of the Democrats, not, you know, who knows what Nancy Pelosi is doing. I think if you look at her, it means that either she didn't do a good job counting the votes, or she didn't care. And we're not going to have the answer to that. She is known as a good vote counter. I think we talked about this a little bit yesterday. But so I kind of think that this was, I'm standing by my man. I think this was a statement, but I don't know that for sure. It could be that she goofed and didn't have a good vote count. But now I know a lot of the Murtha people were steamed, by the way, saying that people who promised to vote for him did not. So that's a whole other sub-story. But I think Democrats know that John Murtha has this whole kind of shadow of ethics problems over him, and they just don't need that. They need to be as clean and untainted as as they can as they start out. And I think that really is what killed Murtha. Even though he's never been convicted of anything, never been found, never been proven, but still.
What kind of a world are we living in where that's what passes for praise? Well, he was never convicted of anything.
Right.
I mean, really, is that it? Is that how far this...
Harry King voice?
Yeah, I mean, is that the, that is my I've only got one voice. I can't really do impressions. I can only talk like me, and then I can talk like this. And that is not just my Larry King. It's also my Brooklyn guy. It's my catch-all lawyer voice.
Hey.
It's my, you know, that's all I can do. But really, this fading republic has just sunk so low that that's what counts as a ringing endorsement. Well, he was never convicted of any crime, and we do believe that he, you know, he does not go home and kick puppies. I mean, that's it. That's where you are. That voice is also, by the way, my Ted Kennedy voice. It doesn't really work, but that's kind of my Ted Kennedy voice. And the reason I bring that up is because, and this radio employees across the country will be curious about this, Democrats are readying for a maximum effort, it says, to raise the minimum wage.
Right.
Now, am I reading this correctly? Is it possible that the federal minimum wage in this country is $5.15?
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
In some sort of alternate universe, is there a place where you can live on that? I mean, and I'm not saying that just to be flip. I mean, really, honestly, isn't there some sort of metric that they're supposed to use to calculate whether or not you can live on that? And what town is it where that works, and can I live there?
I think the answer to all those questions, I have never seen any study that proves that you can live off the minimum wage by yourself, that you can rent an apartment, that you can take care of yourself. A lot of what happens to people who live off minimum wage is they're forced to live in very crowded apartments with other people, or more often they work several jobs. They're working much more than a 40-hour week, a lot of these people. And you really get into the cycle of poverty with folks who are on the minimum wage. It definitely is... a lot of economists argue, though, that there's a real minimum wage which exceeds the federal minimum, that already the market has moved on. That is too low. Not a lot of people will work for the federal minimum wage. And so they say businesses have already boosted it, what it really is. But the truth is, there are some people. I met someone a few months ago that was making $5.15 here in Washington. And that's ridiculous because Washington, much like Portland, any other major city, is an expensive place to live. So, yeah, right now, minimum wage, $5.15.
Is it possible that there, and I say possible, and of course, realizing that it is, let me ask you this. What exactly is the logic from someone on the opposing side who says, no, that's $5.15, that's $7.25, that's highway robbery. How dare we pay people that much? I mean, really, and I'm not just asking that to be kooky. What really would prompt someone to logically say that the minimum wage is just fine, and you know, that $7, that's way too much to hike it?
Well, what the argument is that you're not necessarily raising the lowest wages, because people will say the lowest wages have already gone up naturally. They're saying what happens is the pressure increases wages all across the line, and that, you know, well, those of us making wages think that's great. The businesses say they can't afford it. The businesses say the pressure keeps rolling up, trickles up, I guess you could say. And then they're dealing with people who would normally, are making, let's say, $10, $12 an hour, who would be asking for $15. Now, there's a lot of debate as to whether that really happens. There's a lot of evidence that it does. There's some people who say it doesn't. So, but that's the argument. It's about those more, those higher, somewhat higher wage earners, and how raising the minimum wage would affect the small businesses in particular that affect them.
Yeah, you know, here's what this reminds me of. And I don't get bogged down in the whole thing here because I really don't care all that much. But I have to say that this reminds me of, and this is a sort of a screed that you hear a lot from the sort of, not just from extreme right wingers, but the sort of libertarian types say this too, where they'll talk about taxes and they'll say, well, you know, those high tax rates, what they do is they discourage hard work. They discourage success, which is just the biggest load of crap. I have never met anybody in my life that said, well, you know, taxes are so high when you're rich, I'm going to make this conscious decision to stay in poverty all of my days. No one does that. No one ever says, well, I'm just going to stay poor, because if you get rich, boy, you just have to pay so much. I'd rather live in this flop house. It doesn't happen. So...
No, thank you.
You can file that away in the list of observations. You don't have to give me credit. You can just stick that in your mental Rolodex.
Right.
You can use that whenever you want.
Done. You know, real quick, though, I'm going to break a little CNN advisory here.
Uh-oh.
Okay? I mean, because I have a piece of sound that I want to play you, and
fantastic.
I just received an email saying that the network doesn't want us to play this.
Oh, and yet you're going to go off the reservation. fantastic.
How about it?
All right,
so this is the setup, is that, you know, we have the Republican leader elections today. John Boehner, as many expected, the current number two in the House, will become the number one. Dennis Hastert is stepping away. Mm-hmm. So John Boehner will be the minority leader in January. So also turns out today is John Boehner's birthday. And a Fox News reporter, I guess one of Boehner's staffers, I think this was a Fox News reporter. I'm told it was a competing network, and I recognize the girl's voice. I'm pretty sure this is a Fox News producer. Asked him, you know, oh, will you sing the John Boehner birthday song? You know, it was a planted question. And, in fact, he did sing this song, though CNN is telling us not to play it because a Fox producer was planted with the question. But what the heck? I'm playing this.
Thank you.
Here it goes. Here's John Boehner with the Boehner birthday song.
This is your birthday song. It doesn't last too long. Hey!
That's fantastic.
I knew you guys had to hear that.
Really? And just here's my parting gift to you.
Well, you punch the little buttons and things.
I can show you how to do it.
No, thanks.
There you go. Little Larry King for you there. All right.
I don't go searching.
No, see, so you don't go punching little buttons
and
things.
Oh, there we go.
It's fantastic. You know, in a day and age when Paul Harvey uses the internet, somebody really ought to take Larry King aside and speak with him about evolving culture. That's all I'm saying. All right, Lisa Goddard on the Hill. Enjoy your weekend, sister. We'll talk to you very soon.
Guys. Okay.
There you go. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen. See you on the radio correspondent. I got to say, right there, that was a flawless interview I just did with her. Flawless, no uncomfortable pauses, no weird foot and mouth disease. That's what I'm talking about. Sarah, that's how you bring it. Right there.
Sounds
in case
good.
Anybody should ever ask you what the zone sounds like and to be in it. Right there. Zone. There was this zone. You know where I was? I was in that zone.
Okay.
The zone contained me.
You can stop.
There was this time, Sarah,
Rick,
in the past when I was not in the zone. There was a zone and I was out of it. And then today what happened is I, Rick Emerson, I went right into the zone and that's where I stayed. The zone.
So weird.
What do you punch the little buttons and things?
I can show you how to do it.
No, thanks.
I can't believe you don't find that hilarious. I thought you, of all people, because we all know...
No, even when you were playing it yesterday, I was still waiting for the joke by the time the soundbite was even over.
What do you punch the little buttons and things?
I can show you how to do it.
No, thanks.
See, it's three layers of funny, actually. It's A... This is just, and I would give anything, and I really mean this, for somebody to find that clip, because I know he said it. I saw it in a transcript somewhere, so it's not like some made-up crap. That thing where George W. Bush described the internet as being like a series of tubes. If anybody could find the audio for that, I mean, really, it's just, as my mother used to say, I would give my eye teeth for that. If somebody could find the internet's like a series of tubes. So this is just like that, first of all, when he describes being on the internet as, what is he...
Well, you punch in little buttons.
Yes, you punch in little buttons and things. And then it's Roseanne, and the idea that there would be a conversation in which Roseanne was the learned, educated, stable one, trying to bring somebody to the age of reason. I mean, that's funny right there. The idea that in a conversation between two people, with Roseanne and somebody else, that she's the logical one. And then that she's like, obviously, she's like, well, no, I'll teach you how to use the internet. And it's, no, thanks. I mean, he's a newsman. Theoretically.
Well, you punch the little buttons and things.
I can show you how to do it.
No, thanks.
See, and he just, then when he part of it. No, thank you. Some people are for it, some people are against it. I, Larry King, am against it. All right. The zone is where I was with Lisa Goddard. Bam. All right. 503-733-2970. Are we breaking here?
We could. That means we could actually get to the news hour on time.
Oh, you cracked me up. All right, it's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. You stay there. We're going to come back later on with some other things, and then some stuff, and then some items, and then a happening. In that order. 503-733-2970. It's Friday. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Here's Twisted Sister. Stay there.